born on the 30th of June, 1912. Ben, were you born here in Lakeville?
No, I was born in Montclair, New Jersey, where when my father was working in New York and New Jersey, we had a home, but very soon came up here to Lakeville, where we started as a summer family, but before long my family made their principal home here. This, their home, which is now part of the Hotchkiss School, was built in around 1913 or 14, the early part of the First World War. And there my mother and father lived until they died, and we spent our childhood pretty much, certainly in the summers here, except when we were away at school.
Who's we? Do you have lots of brothers and sisters?
I had a sister, just the two of us. Mm-hmm. And so we've always considered Lakeville to be our home.
Who was your sister? What was her name?
Well, her first husband was Virginian. I'll get this right now. She married a Wack, Damon Wack, whose father lived in the White House down the road. Remember that he was an artist and whatnot.
Sure.
And then she married Larry Campbell. Remember, Larry mm-hmm. was a teacher at Hotchkiss. And then finally, she married John Toulmin, who was a banker in Boston.
She was Virginia Belcher.
Virginia Belcher, right. It goes back quite a ways now, too. The Belcher family originally came, my group of Belchers came from Ancrum, New York. There are a great many Belchers in this world, and particularly in New England. And at one time there was another family of Belchers here in Salisbury, who to my knowledge bore no relationship to the group from Ancrum. My grandfather Belcher was raised in Ancrum, where his parents had a farm, and he taught school there after he got out of the high school or whatever it was that he went to in that area. And then he went into the ministry. There was a Methodist seminary over in Kingston, New York. And he graduated from that seminary and then went into the active ministry. And his first church was in Hillsdale. And his second church was over in Falls Village. And that's how they got over into this particular area. When he was in Falls Village, and I think he must have been there for 4 or 5 years, I don't have the exact, they moved them around and still do, you know, but usually about 4 years. He brought some of his family over this way. His youngest sister married a Hornbeck, Isaac Hornbeck from Falls Village. She was our Aunt Annie. And then another brother who was buried in Glen Rock was John, who I'm told was the station agent for the station in Glen Rock. And they used to have a milk plant down there. And my Aunt Jane, who also came over here after she got out of college, she came over to teach in the Taconic School for Girls. And as you know, that went up the flue back in, I think, around 1913. And her brothers got together. They were then working and making a decent living. And they bought the old inn for her. And she ran it as the Wake Robin Inn. She started it and ran it as the Wake Robin Inn for, until she died, actually. And my grandmother, Belcher, lived with her. After she died, I was one of the executors. We sold the inn, and I was absolutely shocked to see the amount that was paid for the place here just a few weeks ago. But it was a good place. And in those days, of course, they were summer inns. People came and stayed for 2 or 3 weeks or a month or whatever, which was typical of the whole. quite a summer resort. Something else we can talk about a little bit. But that's how the Belchers got over here. And then when my father and mother decided that they were going to make a permanent home here, they built the old house, which is now part of the Hotchkiss School.
Did you tell me that you were a baby in the house at Hotchkiss?
What I think I told you was that I spent my first summer in the old Cleveland cottage at Hotchkiss. That was undoubtedly due to Aunt Jane being here and a house for rent, one thing and another, the way it worked. We have very few relatives left, amazingly, around here, except our own family. Mm-hmm. And because they either died off or moved away or what have you. And some of them didn't have any children. The Hornbecks didn't have any children. They were interesting.
Well, you've got one child living here.
And
right.
Yes,
and the rest
we have
scattered.
Sarah,
yeah,
O'Connor,
Sarah, yeah.
Who's the librarian, yeah, in Salisbury, is lives right across,
yeah,
the street.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, that's how the Belchers got over here. They came over from Hanklin. I think originally, I've been told, I've never been able to check this out, my grandfather Belcher was supposedly born in Ore Hill in 1850. But any basis, what they were doing was coming over. They all had a farm. They had farms over in Akron, and they came over here to work in the iron industry in the wintertime. And that's how I think they really originally got across the mountain, as it were. That is a quick rundown on how the Belchers got here. There are likely to be a number of them, because we've got five children and a whole bunch of grandchildren, and they all love to come back to the farm, fortunately. We'll undoubtedly be seeing even more of them as time goes on. Now, let's see. I don't really think we have to get further into the...
No, I think we'd like to know about your father.
My father worked in the paint business. My maternal grandfather had started a company called Benjamin Warren Company, and it grew, and my father went to work for him, met his daughter, and married her. And that's how they arrived here together. Then, and he continued to work in the company until he died.
Did he have something to do with the town grove?
No, he didn't. I think that our entry into the town grove was largely, I was involved, I'll say, and my mother was interested and involved. We felt quite strongly, and still do, that this is a remarkable town. I consider Salisbury to be an unusual and remarkable place. And I think it's been very good for the Belchers. And all the years, in fact. And I think that both my mother and I felt that we ought to make some attempt to do something to issue or give our thanks to the town. So I talked one day with Bill Barnett, who was a man who I had great admiration for, and still do. And in talking with him, I suggested to him that maybe there ought to be something around this town that needed being done, and that we could provide some help in connection with getting it going. And what did he have in mind? And he almost immediately came up with the suggestion that the town should try to obtain ownership of the grove, which was owned by the Cantine family.
When was this? When you and your mother,
this was about, I could look it up. Must be 30 years ago now.
Because we moved here in 49, and it seems to me that grove was always there.
Well, the grove, before the town ever gained ownership of the grove, It was owned by Francis Cantine, the Cantine family, and it was run by a gentleman whose name escapes me, well, Timmons. His name was Timmons. And he had boats for rent and the swimming facilities and whatnot, but it was distinctly not owned by the town. And Bill Barnett's idea was that the town would benefit tremendously from having its own facilities. At any rate, we got together. I think Bill deserves credit for contacting the Cantines and got them to agree to sell the grove, the then grove, or the part of the grove that we wanted at that time, to the town at what I always considered to be a very moderate price, considering even in those days the cost of lake frontage. We went ahead after we did get purchase worked out. My family contributed a substantial amount. The town put in some money. We got my old buddy Nort Miner out of the hills over on the east side of town, and he laid out the grove. He designed the buildings. At first it was just the little store building that's down by the water, and also he designed the places where you lay the beach areas and the shore front and whatnot. And incidentally, he did this and subsequent work at the grove for nothing. It was his participation in and gift to that phase of the town activities. And I'm not at all sure whether Nort has ever been given the credit which he deserves for all the things he's done in connection with this town. He's one of my oldest buddies around here, so I'm quite enthusiastic about the things which he has done. But the grove was immediately used, and it got going, and then we decided that we needed some kind of a building where people could have dances or card games or luncheons or whatever. And so then we went ahead and made it possible financially to put in the activities building, which is up on the hill. Then subsequent to that, the Cantines decided that the piece of land which they had retained, which has about, I'm guessing now because of about 400 to 500 feet of shorefront, and is separated from the active part of the present grove by a fence, should be obtained if that was possible, and the Cantines again made that possible. And we bought that additional land, which we are holding. I use the word we, I really shouldn't, because I'm not, I finally got off the growth committee, but it's being held, let's put it that way, for future expansion. And it won't be long before that is coming along. It's really, I think we would open up that part of the growth now if it wasn't for economics. And that is something that is going to have to be faced, because we're awful lucky in this town, you know. Our tax rates are pretty low still. And at some point, if the people who are coming into town and the people who are already in town want expanded facilities, why, they're going to have to recognize that they're going to have more lifeguards and more everything that's needed to accommodate that. Incidentally, I don't know if you're aware, Jody, but down on Long Pond, remember the old cedars?
Oh, I do. I can hear those microphones today calling people. Yeah.
And the bells going at night,
yes.
One thing
mm-hmm.
and another.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. You know that the town now owns that property, and very little has been done with it. And the thought has been whether a new administration, if we're going to have one, will have different ideas. The thought has been that that should be kept in decent shape and reserved for future use as the town grows. Now, there are some there are other thoughts, one of which is not bad, which is to take part of that property. There are around 28 acres down there. Take part of the property which is to the west of the hill and make that available for some special type of housing where young people can get in and rent land. You've heard about these possibilities. And build a house themselves under certain restrictions. That's one possibility. The other possibility is if we can ever figure out a way to scoop out a lot of the mud in Long Pond to put in good bathing facilities down there. And I'm sure that if we need it badly enough, we'll be able to figure out a way to do it in the future. But that'll be another generation probably.
Is Long Pond eutrophication, is that the word?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
It's not as bad as, surprisingly, I would venture that it's really not in bad shape as our lake, the big lake, from the eutrophication standpoint. That's because Long Pond has a good what they call flushing rate, good flushing rate. There's a big stream that comes into it, and when you get a big storm, the water comes down, as you know, down Sucker Brook at a great rate, and flows into the pond and flushes it out rather quickly. We think generally that it's in better shape than it has been, but it's full of mud, and really it would be wonderful if we could somehow or other get that dredged out. That mud in Long Pond is caused by the fact that the dam, you know, there's a dam at the foot of the pond. That dam has been filled up by years and years of flushing mud down from Hotchkiss and from all the other areas. And we have to figure out some way of digging out all that mud and really flushing the lake completely to take a lot of that unattractive aspect out of the pond. But it certainly should be and will be tried, I think, by in another 20 years it'll be necessary to do something like that.
You know, you and I were talking briefly the last time I was here about your feelings about how the town has changed and that it's still a very, very fine place to live.
Oh, yes, Jody. I was thinking about this just yesterday. The town has changed, and yet in many ways it hasn't changed me. You know that most of our new friends who are moving into town will not believe or haven't ever heard, really, that Lakeville used to be the business village, and Salisbury was where one lived in style. Now, Salisbury is a business village, and Lakeville is a pretty nice little place to live on its own. And that's only been within 20 years, maybe 25 years at the most, that change has taken place. Maybe that will reverse itself one of these days. But of course, as you and I have talked about, what's our population? I think permanent population is about 4,200,
is it? 4,200, I think.
Yeah, and used to be, 7,000 when the mines were going? Lime Rock, I think, I may get in trouble with this statement, but the Lime Rock, I think, has fallen on hard times. We used to call it the deserted village. Well, I can remember, I don't know you, I don't think you can, when the iron industry, all the big smelters and whatnot were down there along the brook. It went down for almost, or they ran down almost a mile down that brook. They all burned in subsequent years, but that's where they built the car wheels for the railroads and the engine grates for the railroads. And it wasn't until the ore gave out Ore Hill. Yes, that those forges, that they had the fires and the whole thing. Just closed up. been, for years, they call it the deserted village. Because there were some awfully nice little houses, and gradually had a nice little, movie house over there. Yeah, and I can show you where that is sometime. It later became a nice little restaurant, sort of opposite the big building on the right, which was an inn in years gone by. And it was a lovely place to visit. Quiet.
Lime Rock Lodge.
Lime Rock Lodge, of course. Of course. Remember the nice restaurant they had along the brook?
Do I?
Mm. I mean, there's so many nice things down there, you know. But I'm afraid that the track has permanently hurt the little village. And I don't see any opportunity to turn the situation around. You and I both know friends who live down there, and they're all very active in trying to get something done, but it's tough going.
You can't bulldoze it away, I'm afraid.
We can even hear the noise when the wind is from the east here. You can't pull those away. And the investments are pretty big in that track area down there. But that was a great little place in the old days. There's a big change, of course. But still, we're so lucky. I mean, my goodness. I have not yet seen the Salisbury Association has a lot of new maps that they've just produced, and Mary Alice White is primarily responsible for a lot of this work that the Land Trust Committee has been doing. And it'll be interesting to look at those maps and charts and see how much of our land is still in forest and woods, and how much of it is left in farms, about which we have a pretty good record, and how much is left in villages, as it were. And I don't think the changes will be much from way back, really. Now, whether this influx of new homes is going to continue, I doubt.
I agree.
We have, in our own business, Jody, we've seen some rather dramatic changes. For example, we had tremendous growth in Texas and all along the so-called Sun Belt from Florida right on across. But Texas, Louisiana, and a few of those states, our business is off about 16-17% this last year, and a little more than that the year before. It's all due to the fact that new construction has just stopped, and they've really got some problems. Of course, people are coming back up to good old Lakeville from Texas. People went down there, you know, and to work and get jobs. So I don't know. I think that this that we will see the end of this tremendous development in a fairly short period of time. Then what? Maybe we're going to have some problems liquidating these newly built great big homes that have been. That's another interesting aspect, you know. When I was a young kid around here, some of the great, old, wonderful, old-fashioned, huge stone homes, you know, that were built up in Taconic, for
example,
yes. That was over. That period we'd gone through, and it wasn't too many years after that we started getting into a depression, and that phase was done. And it's taken, 1938, 36, till now, to get the reversal and another big influx of homes and so forth. And that'll probably ease off. That's my guess here. But in fact, I feel quite confident that, because you see the thing creeping in all directions. But an interesting aspect of that, you want me to continue?
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that as you know, we have a housing committee here in town, And we spent 3.5 years, over 3 years and 9 months, trying to get this housing project up in Salisbury off the ground. And one of our problems was that the Farmers Home Administration, FMHA we call it, seemed to be at that point the only logical source of the funds, because they give you the money that you need to start a project of this kind with on a 50-year loan basis at 1% a year, and it's pretty hard to beat that. So we stuck with this particular aspect. And after the present administration really got tough about when the present administration started to clamp down on expenditures for civilian purposes, shall we say, as opposed to military purposes and whatnot, organizations such as this FMHA group were cut way back in their funding ability. And Connecticut was cut back, oh, I think 500-600%. It was just chopped way down. And there we were with plans pretty well drawn, but no funds. And so we had to wait until finally our little program got up high enough to warrant the funds that we needed. And that's why it's been delayed primarily. And understandably, I mean, I understand that. But I'm really, we all are excited about this in a way, because it's all aimed at young people, you know. This is not going to be an old person's home. It's going to be a place for young mothers who are not married or married or whatever, and young people who are trying to establish homes and so forth. And I hope that we will be able to expand it, because I know doggone well that the 16 units we're going to have over there, 20 aren't they? Four of 16, are not enough. We're going to have some more. However, the funds are becoming available, and that's my point. The whole situation is loosening up. And we have, all of a sudden, we had a terrible time getting contractors. They didn't want to do this kind of thing. They wanted to build these big, fancy new homes, you know, for which they made a great deal more money, of course. And however, now, we're getting noises. We're hearing noises about architects, too. Now, if anybody else is doing any work up there like this, let us know. We'd like to get involved and so forth. So there is a gradual, slow easing up of the very tight housing situation, which is the basic reason why you're seeing people coming in who want to do this sort of thing. Anyway, I'm glad that's out of the way. And it's been a tremendous interest to me. I think I may have told you that Bill Barnett and I and Sid Coles and a couple of others, I can't remember who they were. This was a long time ago when we were down the other place, had a meeting, or several meetings, at least 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, talking about what we could do to get some housing started around here. And I don't know what happened. It never came to anything. Their funds weren't available. We couldn't borrow that kind of money from the bank and still have low rents and so forth. Nothing to do with the bank, but that was the slide for you. And it simply wasn't, we couldn't get it going. But I cite that as an example of how long some people have been thinking about the need for housing around here. And I get a little angry when some of our local political friends are trying to be highly critical of this particular issue, you know. But that's underway and that's going. And I think that's a good example of the kind of thing people like to do around this town. You know, of course, everybody's gotten involved in all kinds of other activities. The Salisbury Association is indeed a good means. I see it primarily it's a little bit of a do-gooder organization, on the one hand, and an actual funding organization for certain purposes on the other. And we have been able in recent years to help the selectmen when they didn't want to go to have a special town meeting, for example, to get $2,000 to pay Ted Davis to work on the lake in the summertime. The Salisbury Association would move in. In some cases, in the case of Twin Lakes as an example, the Salisbury Association paid half of it, of the cost of having studies made on Twin Lakes, and, I beg your pardon, a third of the cost, and the town paid a third of the cost, and the Twin Lakes Association paid a third of the cost up there. And these organizations that can work with the town are very useful in order to get things done. Now, the greatest thing that I think we've been able to do is to protect the farmland through conservation easements. I shouldn't really say the greatest thing, but it's certainly something that needed impetus, and the Land Trust Committee of the Salisbury Association, which has first was organized by Bill Marl, and now is under the wonderful direction of Mary Alice White, and she's quite a woman, incidentally, has been able to do all the bring out maps, they've done all kinds of things to get a real handle on that which we have, and therefore a means of trying to make recommendations as to that which we should do in the future. Of course, there are all kinds of other activities in the Salisbury Association, too. One of the things, Jody, that we've gotten started again, which I'm very happy about, is the historic end of it. That slipped for a while. The older ladies who were active in that field 20, 25 years ago did a great job. But then some of the younger people got into the act, and we got into these more needful type of immediate situations, and I think slipped away a little bit from our historic aspects. But we've got some good people in that field now. Have you heard that we've completed all the 1,800 photographs. Yeah, and that cost us about $20,000.
I can believe it.
Yeah, but the job is done, and it's been paid for, and we have the pictures. And I understand that there aren't too many other towns that have something of that about nature. They're getting looking at a lot of the old books that have been written about the town. A lot of them have inaccuracies and need revising and updating, and that's being done now. They've got all of the historic end I'm talking about. Remember Mr. Knickerbocker, the surveyor? Well, together with the town, we bought all of his old maps. We have every one that he ever put out, and they're now being analyzed and looked over to see which ones may have historic value, and that we will keep them. Where are we going to put all this stuff?
I was just going to say to you, now, where are we going to put all of this?
Well, you know that in the library, the original historic books upon which the library was founded are still there. But any old historic anything, maps, letters, books, or what have you, really require careful storage. And one of the aspects that is needed is some kind of constant temperature, constant humidity protection. There is today a vault of type of sorts in the library, and our hope is that when the town hall is finished, that we'll be able to get that vault, the temporary vault, and we'll fix it up a bit and put some constant temperature, constant humidity equipment in it, and store all of our memorabilia in there, particularly those old books that we want to really protect for the future. There's a tremendous amount of stuff.